2019. Unbelievable. I gotta check this out, Josh.
All in good time, Tom. We're on a tight schedule here.
Tell me about my year. I know it's great, but did everyone love Death Stranding?
Please, Tom. Nobody should know too much about their own destiny.
Right, right. But Death Stranding is good, right?
Tom, we live in a world where Star Wars is taking over December now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Skywalker saga has concluded.
Yes, yes, for better or for worse.
But it is over. But has it? Like,
oh, no, it'll definitely be back in 30 years. Disney is going to give this a break. They're going to give us films set in different eras of the Star Wars galaxy to, you know, keep the Star Wars brand alive, but to give all these new characters a break. And then, I guarantee in 30 years we're going to get a, you know, late 40s Rey and the story about how something happens with somebody from, you know, her school. And, I guarantee that'll happen. Yeah.
I went and saw Rise of Skywalker again. I went and saw it on Christmas Day. And there was so much more the second time watching it. I was like, oh, wow. Like, it's a very enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
It's a summer blockbuster in the winter.
Yeah. I've not seen it for a second time, but I have thought about it, and I would say that if I did see it again, I'm probably still going to be annoyed at what I think are the big, I don't think any of the big shocking reveals work, but there are moment-to-moment pieces of it that I have a lot of fun with. So, yeah, I imagine when I see it again, I'm probably going to have more fun with it than I did the first night.
Becca absolutely loved Babu.
Oh, Babu is my son. Let's just clarify. Whatever this movie's failings are, Babu is the greatest achievement in recent Star Wars memory. And hot take,
well,
Babu...
next to the child?
Well, Babu Frick is better than the child.
Yeah, okay. He doesn't got those chicken nuggies, though.
He doesn't need them. The only moment... Well, I won't spoil this, but Babu Frick provided my only moment of pure joy in the movie. Yep, you dried is already.
And with that, this is a Cast in the Past where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. Like always, I'm Josh.
And I'm Babu Frick's father, Tom. Tom Frick.
And today we will be discussing the best games of 2019 and the games that we played in 2019 that didn't come out in 2019.
Mm-hmm. Best of the decade and... Oh, whoops, we did that episode already. Best of the year and best in the year, essentially.
Yeah, because, you know, you play a game and you're like, oh, I hear about this. Or maybe it's a game that finally arrived on the Switch. Or maybe it's a game that finally arrived on other consoles that we couldn't play previously.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Who knows?
But I feel like our lists are going to be completely polar opposites.
Well, mostly because I didn't play a lot this year, Josh. And as we get through this, I'm going to be kind of talking about... Josh, I didn't really care for this year as a gaming year. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
I think it was filled with some disappointments that we'll get into. We'll get into, but...
All right.
I want to get my sad face out at the front of the episode. What about you, Josh? Just in a general sense, did you think this was a good year for gaming?
I thought it was a decent year. It had a very strong start.
Mm-hmm.
And I think throughout the year, it kind of like came to a stop, maybe... like right around the summertime, we didn't have a really strong holiday.
No. Oh, I'd agree completely.
Like we had a couple good things, but a lot of it, like a lot of the good things that I've played were downloadable games or DLCs or additions to stories and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Expansion packs, as the kids used to call it back in the day.
Ugh.
But yeah, I think it was kind of like, maybe like one every couple months we had something good come from it.
Yes.
And like, I think the biggest thing that like everyone was always most excited about this year was when there's a new Smash Brothers character coming out.
A new Smash Bro, if you will.
Yeah. Like it was like, oh, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? Oh, it's Banjo-Kazooie. And he's today. Oh my God. Like that was like the fun stuff. And then people would be playing that. And then like, everything else is kind of getting pushed off to the side. Like, nothing... Like, there were some good games. Yeah. We'll get into that.
There were.
But...
I think this year just had... was notable in that some of its most anticipated titles ended up really disappointing fans. And the two biggest ones I would point at are probably Kingdom Hearts 3 and Death Stranding. Now, I know Death Stranding kind of has a lot more defenders, at least that I've interacted with, than Kingdom Hearts did. But, you know, Kingdom Hearts literally, like you said, strong start of the year. Kingdom Hearts came out in January, and the hype was intense. You know, 14 years of buildup. And then I very few people I've interacted with were like, oh, that was great. It's always like, I waited this long for this. And then, you know, Death Stranding is apparently split the gaming community in half, which is ironic because it's a game about healing America, but instead it's everyone's now like, wah! So, yeah.
But split nerdism in half more. Was it Death Stranding or was it The Rise of Skywalker?
Honestly, I think it was Death Stranding.
What are you talking about? Kojima fanboys are freaking out because their game isn't actually that good?
Even your cat agrees, apparently.
I know. Yeah!
All right. Well, we don't want this to be all hate. I'm just kind of prefacing some thoughts on disappointment. But so, Josh, how should we get into this? What do you want to kick off with first?
So we'll kick off with the best of 2019. I know you said you didn't jump into a lot of things from this year, but I did. I actually played some of the big heavy hitters.
Well, good for you.
Excluding Death Stranding. And Kingdom Hearts 3. but I'm going to kick off with a game that I didn't expect to enjoy as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't... okay, to say I enjoyed it is... isn't probably the right word to use. I'm a pretty big fan of like horror stuff, and I'm a pretty big fan of like spooky stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like for those of you listening, one of my favorite horror movies, I think actually is the scariest movie of all time. Take it with you know however you would like. Is I think the Blair Witch Project. It's just so unsettling, not knowing what's out in the woods. You know what I mean? Like, you can't see anything, but you hear this stuff, and it's going on. Like, it's a great what if, but, like, in such a realistic world. Like, and the way it was shot, I think, is just... unlike anything that happened back in 1999, minus Episode 1, Phantom Menace.
What a bar you set. In one of the greatest movie years of all time. It's Blair Witch and Phantom Menace. Josh, I love you.
But number three on my list of 2019 was the Blair Witch Project game. And this is a game I sat down and I started playing and I was like, I'm going to see what all the hype is. Now, one really cool thing is in my game room, I have it set up that I have my Philips Hue lights synced up with the game. So as you're playing the game, the lights are reacting to what's going on around. So when you're out in the woods and you're walking around and spooky stuff's starting to happen during the daytime, and then you notice that the game's starting to get, you know, it's starting to go to nighttime, the lights in the room start to get darker and darker and darker till you're in the pitch black and the game's in the pitch black.
Right, right.
I think it's... so you have games like Amnesia, you have games like Outlast, and all those other kind of like jump scare horror games. This wasn't really that much of a jump scare. It was more of a psychological type game when it came to horror.
Okay.
The biggest thing is, have you ever seen the Blair Witch Project?
Oh, yes, I've seen it.
Okay.
I've never seen any of its sequels or reboots or anything, but the original is...
you don't need to see Book of Shadows.
Okay.
You don't need to see Book of Shadows, but the reboot that they kind of did a couple years ago, actually pretty good.
Okay.
But towards the end, without spoiling anything, your character has PTSD from the war. And he has a companion dog with him.
Okay.
And his dog goes missing. I can't say what happens because it's a big story piece. But the dog goes missing towards the end of the game. And your character starts to have a PTSD episode. at the same time that he discovers the house at the end of the movie. So stuff's going on, and like your character starts to like have this episode, and the witch is kind of messing with you throughout the whole game. And it's like, I was at the end of the game, and it's been like, I was like an hour and 15 minutes, and like I'm just like, please just like kill him already, like just kill him. And like he's like screaming in the game just to finally like end it and stuff like that. And I'm like, just please do it for him. Like, you believe so much of the character that's in the game. It's just like you feel like you're that character right there. And I never like experienced something like, I played horror games before, but I've never experienced something like, I'm actually afraid for this character.
Mm-hmm.
And I know towards the end, when you actually stumble upon the house, I sat there and I had the controller in my hand and the goosebumps on my arm. I have goosebumps right now talking about it. Like, they popped up, and Becca's like, what's the matter? I'm like, do you know, like, this is the scariest movie of all time in my eyes, right? She goes, yeah. I go, now I have to participate in the scariest movie of all time. Like, and I think that's why, like, it's a really good, downloadable game. It's on Game Pass right now on the Xbox. If you have it, it took me maybe 6-7 hours to beat the whole thing. It is an amazing experience. If you're looking for something during that, scary time of the year.
Okay. Okay. It's really intriguing. I did not know that the main kind of conceit was that the main character had PTSD, and I think that is an interesting and kind of bold choice for more games to start going with as a relatable plot point. So, yeah, I mean, the character you mentioned is a war veteran, but, you know, PTSD can kind of surface in multiple ways. So the notion of using that to play on horror, I think when done well, as you're describing, it sounds like it was done well, probably can yield a lot of results for horror. So I'm definitely going to check it out, knowing it's on Game Pass. That was really cool to hear that recommended from you. Awesome. I'm more intrigued about it. Yeah, I'm more intrigued about it than I had been. Yeah, I can easily say that.
It's weird because, like, I only played that like a week ago. And it was just one of those things like, you know, I'm just going to try it out, see how it is. And I was playing it with the lights and the experience that I had just like kind of living it in the room at the same time. And I was like, man, this is like crazy right now. But yeah, it's just weird that like it was one of those games. Like when I was done with it, I was like, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was like, man, that was really scary. That was really scary. That was really scary.
Well, that's the mark of a great game when it like sticks with you afterwards, you know? And like, especially when it evokes your emotions.
I think it's up there with scariest games I've ever played.
Okay. What else would be in that? Like, at least what's your top three scariest games if that's in there?
I can't talk about that list right now, Tom, because the other one might appear on this.
Oh my, you've had a spooky year.
I did.
All right. Nice. Okay. Well, my first game of the year, quote unquote. See, this is where my list is going to start having candidates that kind of appear with big asterisks next to them. It was that kind of a year for me. So I want to talk about Pokemon Sword and Shield, and I hope I don't start doing this every year where I just have a Pokemon game in my top by default like I did last year. But I find it's comfort food, you know. But like, what really made me connect with it this year, and this is a game that came front loaded with all this controversy about how the Pokédex is incomplete and the character models were recycled from previous games, and this game was basically a war crime before it even hit the Switch. And you know, when I played it, beyond the typical annoyances I had with like the hand-holding tutorials in the beginning and some of the linear pathways towards getting towards the actual meat of the game itself, this one connected with me in a way that I found surprising just because of the new approach to the world building. First and foremost, I really liked how within this game, the Pokemon League itself is treated like this actual piece of pop culture within the region. And just what I mean by that is how, so the Galar region is based off of England, and the Pokemon League is very visually obviously going for a kind of European football feel. Everyone wears jerseys that are similar to what soccer players would wear. They take place in these big stadiums. But that's what was interesting about it, is that taking the challenge to be a Pokemon champion actually felt like you were climbing a professional athletic ladder in a way that I think was really appealing and kind of like made the drive more interesting than just like, hey, generic 10-year-old, go out into the wild and just, you know, good luck, don't die. So, it's crazy how just like one little bit of atmosphere building or just world change can make a game feel that much more appealing. And then of course, like the wild area. Now, I think the wild area comes with a lot of shortcomings in that it's not big enough and it's filled with a lot of like graphical inconsistencies. I'm not a graphics first kind of guy. I think some very kind of like unpolished or even ugly looking games can be good. But this one is just kind of weird with like pop-ins and just inconsistent textures and stuff. But it was exciting. You know, wandering around, not knowing what you could find and not knowing what could sneak up on you. Thinking, oh, there's like something I can totally catch and add to my team. And then you find out that it's an overleveled beast standing in your way who might kick your ass if you don't run away as quickly as possible. It just added this new intriguing kind of sense of exploration that's just better than the old games of just like, you know, wandering around in grass and waiting to be jumped and hoping that whatever jumps you doesn't disappoint you, you know? And, The max raid battles. See, I quit Pokemon Go fairly quickly, so I never got to participate in the raid battles within that game. So doing the max raid battles online with people in Sword and Shield, I thought was really fun. And, you know, friends of mine who played Go were like, oh, this is just like those raid battles. So I got in on the fun factor of that, and I very much enjoyed it. So, yeah, lots of things about it I really had fun with. But at the same time, you know, it just suffers from this degree of sameness. Now, I know I just called it comfort food, but there is a point where, like, you get so bored with the taste of something that you want something new. And, you know, as soon as I beat the game and its very small post-game narrative, I haven't picked it up since. And it's kind of annoying because, like, now I just feel like I have a $60 paperweight in the form of this game case because I don't know what to do with it. And unless they're going to start announcing new details of what they want to do with it, I just don't know where I'm going with it. So, like, as I mentioned at the start, I hope I don't start entering this period where I'm putting Pokemon games in my top game of the year because Pokemon has become this annualized franchise. You know, like, the last 4 years, we've gotten a new entry. And I kind of think this is coming at the sacrifice of quality because it seems like they're just rushing titles out to make sure they have a Pokemon game ready for the holidays. So I would really not mind if Pokemon went away for a while and took the good ideas it's learned from this generation, polished them up, add better ideas, and come back with like an even stronger game. Because this game, I feel like, has shown a lot of potential that I didn't see in Sun and Moon and I didn't see in X and Y. So maybe at least back to Black and White is the last time that like one of these games has like made me go, oh, this could be something more, you know?
Yeah. I think this is where we're going to kind of break off a little bit because I didn't enjoy it.
Not at all. Okay.
It's just more of the same. Mm-hmm. Like, and you've hit on that too, but like it really is. Like, name the last time that they did something different with the Pokemon formula. It is just a glorified rock, paper, scissors anymore.
Oh, I don't disagree with you at all. It is. I don't have a problem with the formula myself. It's just the things that they build around the formula or the things that they don't build around the formula, you know?
Like, they talked about in the game, like, oh, if you lose a certain amount of matches, the stadium trainers will have to go back down to the minor league and stuff like that. And that was all they ever talked about, this minor league. Like, why didn't you have to start off in the minor league mm-hmm. to work your way up to this one? Like, the routes were so short. Going into caves were so short. Like, it felt like like, we were expecting the Breath of the Wild of Pokemon games.
Mm-hmm.
And we got really not that. We just got
the Skyward Sword of Pokemon games?
Pretty much, yeah. It just, man, it was just so empty. Like, that's the best way to describe it. The story was so rushed towards the end. That whole last act was just like, what? You didn't even mention any of this stuff going on throughout the entire game, but okay, like,
yeah, this is,
I guess we're fighting a god right now.
Yeah, this is another one of those moments where I actually am kind of tired of legendary Pokemon driving the plot. If you think about Red and Blue, and even Gold and Silver, their legendary Pokemon weren't part of the story. They were incidental. They were part of the world, and, like, learning about them and ultimately catching them was just kind of a side thing that you can do. Like, Team Rocket was not trying to get Moltres, Articuno, and Zapdos together, you know, and do something crazy with them. Those three birds were just around. And I think, yeah, like, from Ruby and Sapphire onward, we've been stuck in this pattern of, like, oh, the bad guy's plot always has to involve the legendaries. And, you know, in here, like you said, in the third act, it's really sloppy because every time something's happening with the game's big central mystery, the champion, Leon, shows up and he's like, hey, you, main character, I'm going to handle this. You keep going with the gym challenge. So like you said, like, they don't make your character part of the mystery. And then when the god shows up, it's like, oh, only you can defeat him. But it's like, I've never been part of this, you know? So
yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I think an ideal kind of Pokemon game would get back to just making your journey the focus and cut the legendary, you know, destiny stuff. Just get back to a simple formula.
It's so bad though, because like every city was the same thing. You show up at town, you fight your rival. You go in, you do like one or two little mission things here. You fight Team Yell, you beat the gym trainer, you fight Hop again at the end. Like, come on. Like, it was just all eight cities was the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. Like, there wasn't any like build up or tension. I didn't even get to a point where I was like, man, like, I can't beat this. I was so overpowered going into every gym. Mm-hmm. And they had those little mini games, like the first one, like the,
with the Wooloos?
I think it was the fire gym. The fire gym. I think it was like the second or third gym.
That's the third gym. Yeah.
Yeah. You get all these fire Pokemon. Like, you don't even find any fire Pokemon throughout the game till that time. You get those, you just level up those guys a little bit for the next gym, and you're already done with the grass gym. It's like, like, what the hell is going on? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's... So one of my new favorite YouTube channels right now is Girlfriend Reviews.
Oh, Girlfriend Reviews is bae. Yes.
And it is amazing and it's great. And they did a review on Pokemon Sword and Shield. Mm-hmm. And like the end of it, mm-hmm, really breaks down, like, Pokemon isn't it's not a video game anymore. It's just a multi-billion dollar toy manufacturing company. They just want to make you feel like they're, you know, a game company still.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'd agree. Yeah, they can't change anything too radically because they need to guarantee that it will still sell, and they are afraid of doing anything new because all they know is that people are into what they already do, so we can't divert from the familiar. Yeah, it's a bummer. I don't know how it's going to be solved. Again, I personally don't think the formula is as cracked yet. I think you can still, it's a good skeleton. It's just that they've never been building a decent, you know, body around the rest of it, and I hope that they maybe get their shit together and go fix it. I don't know. So again, yeah, this is,
I,
like,
really do feel like the last great Pokemon game was Platinum.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because Platinum had a great post game, and that's where the whole Destiny crap wasn't so overstuffed or in your face. Yeah, Platinum was good. And I wish this had been at least kind of close to Platinum. But what can you
do? Let's talk about things that are good, though. My number two for 2019. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Mmm.
I was very skeptic when I saw the stuff at E3, and I was like, I don't know how this is going to be. I don't think this is going to, you know, this isn't going to hit the Star Wars niche that I need when it comes to them Vigi games. So, and I started seeing reviews, and I started seeing a lot of gameplay, and I was like, I don't know, I'm kind of liking this. Once the game got released, I was like, I think this is, this might be a good thing. So I did what every normal person would do, and I bought Luigi's Mansion 3. At that time, I did not open Luigi's Mansion 3. And then like a week or so later, I was like, you know what? I'm going to return Luigi's Mansion and I'm going to get Jedi Fallen Order. And I sat down and I played it, And it was, yes, it's very Dark Souls-like. Yes, it's very, you know, Metroidvania and stuff like that. But, like, it's, like, the Star Wars game that, like, I always wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of my favorite games were, like, Jedi Outcast, Jedi Academy, stuff along those lines. This might be up there as one of the best Star Wars games ever made. Like, I loved every second of it, except for some of the parts of Dathomir. But I will be okay with that one little teeny part of the game. But the game's so good, and then, like, how can this game get any better? And then you get to the last, like, 15, 20 minutes of the game, and it turns kind of into, like, a horror game, almost. I don't know if you've gotten that far in it yet, but it is wonderful. It is great. The customization to the game, your team, the acting is fantastic. The world itself, like, there's so many things you're looking at, like, oh, man, like, there's this ice planet in the game, and I'm like, is this what Starkiller Base was? And, like, it's a whole big theory now, too. Like, they were, you know, this is where they would mine kyber crystals for lightsabers and stuff like that. And it's like, well, hold on a second. Kyber crystals powered a Death Star. Wait a second. Like, you're just, like, you're getting all these, like, ideas and stuff like that for it. But it's like, yeah, I don't know. I just absolutely loved Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. I think it's one of the best Star Wars games made. And I'm happy that Respawn did a very good job with it. And look, EA sometimes makes really good games. As Jaeger's Retro Review says, EA gets a very bad rep.
Well, they kind of brought a lot of it on themselves, let's be fair.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not going to... One good deed does not... You know, it's like Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
One good deed does not does cause redemption.
Oh, wait, then it's not like Darth Vader because his good deed did.
No, it's not. He still died at the end.
He was allowed to become a Jedi Force ghost, you know.
He killed those younglings.
Oh, he did.
I know I said younglings because we're in Pennsylvania and Yingling Lager.
This is a complete side tangent, but my brother and I have been playing Battlefront 2 a lot, and anytime he spawns as Anakin Skywalker, he's like, go get them younglings, boy. Go get them.
I know you said you were playing it a little bit.
Well, let's just get into it. My number two of the year is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, but so asterisk. But as you say with Pokemon, here, we're going to have a divergence. I like it in spite of how kind of broken a lot of the game is. This is a buggy game, and I'm surprised they haven't patched it yet. And, I am not done with it. Deal with it. I don't care. I can like a game and not be done with it, people. But here's the thing. It is kind of a mess. There are so many instances of, like, textures not loading, platforms not loading, characters not loading. The combat, you know, you won't properly interact with something, and then you'll get thrown off a ledge or killed, even though you were, like, in the right kind of manner of doing things. And it's not a matter of get good, it's a matter of, like, you're good enough, but the game isn't keeping up with you. It's
I would argue that one, because there are some parts where you really just aren't powerful enough to do some things.
Oh, I don't disagree. So you... Like that stupid big frog the, I think it's called Barthmore or whatever that
Boromir.
No, Boromir's from Lord of the Rings. We're crossing nerd references here. But anyway,
the
training
stick.
Planet, you know. And there's that big stupid frog who will constantly kick your butt. And so, like, you got to come back. Yes.
So how'd you beat him?
Oh, so here's what I did. The frog can't cross the doorway into the room, but he can come right up to the edge of it. So I stood in the doorway, would wait for his attack animations to end, hit him a couple times, and then walk backwards a little bit so I was out of range. And then I would just keep doing it, baiting him in, hitting him, baiting him in. And it took me about 5 minutes, but I ultimately killed him.
Okay.
And I'm not going to lie, I've killed a couple strong monsters that way. I'm like, where's a door? Yeah, he can't get through there.
So funny thing about that is if you go up on top of the world, like on top of the area where it's at, you can jump through the holes and you can do an aerial attack, which takes about half of its health off.
I kind of put that math together a little later when I was like, what's that room? Like, oh, that's the frog room. But yeah. But like, all right, Positives, yes. It's got this big, exciting Star Wars feel. It incorporates original trilogy and prequel trilogy imagery in a way that's exciting. You know, if you're a Star Wars fan like we are, this is like catnip. I like the idea behind Cal's central conflict. I like where the story has been going. I think a lot of the kind of temples and the puzzles they have you do are pretty fun, and there's been some pretty genuine head scratchers for me in a satisfying way, you know, like, or it's like, oh, I'm not completely above this game, you know, like I have to put a little work in, and that's enjoyable. I've never played
without giving too much spoilers. Where are you at?
Okay. I just went to the Zepho planet for the second time and got force pull. I don't remember if I left the planet for the next destination or not yet, though.
Okay. Okay. There are some characters in the expanded universe and some characters in games that we've played and reviewed on this channel, too, that come back into the game.
Oh, God. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. Oh, God.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But it's really good. Okay. But yeah, I know you were saying you haven't played a Dark Souls game before.
I haven't, so this has been an interesting experience. I mean, I guess Hollow Knight is technically a Dark Souls-esque game in how it operates. And this, you know, reminded me of that. It's a lot of this is not a game about being aggressive. This is a game about, you know, being a Jedi. It's a Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and defense, never for attack. So you're supposed mm-hmm. to gain knowledge about your enemies and be defensive until you can, you know, strike that decisive blow. And I really do, I have to say, like, that is something I really did enjoy, is that the gameplay complements the logic of this world. And, yeah, the platforming can be fun. The wall running is always fun. It's one of those asterisk games. It's like, I am enjoying myself, but there's just so many smaller problems of it.
Oh, there is. Yeah, there's a problem with load times. There's problems with textures and stuff like that. I know they're going to end up fixing this stuff.
Right.
It's annoying at times, but it really doesn't take away from your experience with it. Like, at times I'm like, ugh. I know if I fall down a pit, the loading screen is going to be pretty short. But if you die, the loading screen is forever.
It's unforgiving. Like, and it's like, if that's supposed to, like, make you want to get better so you don't die, maybe that's a clever, sadistic choice. But, you know.
I think, though, it is very enjoyable. It is it's a great alternative to the Star Wars games that we have been receiving.
Uh-huh.
We haven't really had a great Star Wars game since probably the first Force Unleashed.
Okay. Yeah. I would say that is in some ways a minimum argument for a good Star Wars game. Yeah, wow. So 11 years later, they kind of got it right. And funnily enough, as it's just a tangent, 11 years later, it's now 2019. It's 2 years after Battlefront 2 was released. And I don't know if you've played it at all or gone back to it, but Battlefront 2 somehow, against all odds, got good, Josh.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't played it at all yet. I was thinking about buying it because I see it every time at like Target for like $10. And I'm like, I should pick it up and just play it through the campaign. But
my friend Frank got it for me as a birthday gift last year, and I played it for a little bit, and I was like, oh, like, this is a really solidly built multiplayer shooter. Like, the mechanics are good. I just remember when it came out, all the negativity was built around the way they built microtransactions into the game, and they kind of structured the way the multiplayer gives you rewards in a way that kind of pushes you towards buying things. You know, the amount of time it took to get anything was so long, it was like, maybe I should just pay for it, you know. But mm-hmm. the game as it stands now, like, I've been playing sessions for like the last couple nights with my brother, and there is a ton of content and game modes in there that they have added over the last 2 years. Like I said, the core gameplay is very fast paced and fun, and they are now up to a point where they have content from the prequel, sequels, and original trilogy. So you're always going to kind of get like a fresh perspective on a level no matter what you play. I think it is kind of, in spite of itself, become a worthwhile game. And it's just sad it had to launch in such a messy state. that just seems to be EA standards now, is just launch something messy and hope it gets better later, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you do pick it up and you want to play, I'd say get it on Xbox One and you and I can play together.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So, Josh, I've diverted you for quite a while now. What would you... You want to get to your number one of the year?
I talked about Blair Witch being one of the spookiest games I've ever played. And I talked about Jedi Fallen Order's last 15 to 20 minutes being pretty, like, horror-driven for what you're doing and what you're experiencing. But my number one, Resident Evil 2 Remake.
Yes.
So we talked about Kingdom Hearts 3 coming out in January, but what if Kingdom Hearts 3 got destroyed by a remake of a game from the 90s?
That's such an that's such an implausible scenario. I can't... Oh, wait, I think it happened.
Resident Evil 2 next to Monster Hunter World is like Capcom's like biggest like selling game of all time.
Well, Resident Evil 2 has always had that very passionate fan base behind it. That's kind of like the Empire Strikes Back of its own series, to use an easy cliche example, you know.
And we talked about before our greatest games of all time, and my top five, Resident Evil 2 always made the top five. I mean, it's staying there. Mm-hmm. It's just getting knocked off for the Resident Evil 2 remake. In our previous episode, we talked about the greatest games of the decade. I said Doom 2016 is a remake of a franchise or a reboot of a franchise that surpasses everything. And it's the perfect reboot or whatnot. This is a perfect remake. This is how remakes should be done. Completely from the ground up, with little alternative changes here and there. Some little story pieces that can be fixed or manipulated or changed and made it a survival horror game. Mm-hmm. Like you're in a survival horror game. Unlike 4, 5, and 6, you're in a survival horror with zombies. It is just fantastic. It's a game I've known and loved for over 20 years now, which is crazy to say, but just better. Like, yes, it's still cliche and campy with some of the story beats and stuff like that, with bioweapons and all this kind of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, you take Umbrella Corporation for what they have. When I got Resident Evil 2 Remake, I sat down, played it beginning to end. No breaks, no nothing. I was like, I gotta do this. Played it, beat it. The next game, started it up again, played through the entire thing again. Because I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is fantastic. And it's Resident Evil 2, so there's four different ways to play the game. Not counting all the extra bonuses, all the other unlockable content or characters and stuff like that that you can play through and all the other different game modes. Like, there's so much content in this game. Like, this is how a reboot should be done, or a remake should be done. Yeah, they went through and they did Shadow of the Colossus and they fixed some things up, did some graphical errors, but it was pretty much the same exact game. Yeah, they went through and they did this, you know, they reboot all these other franchises, but like, man, like, Capcom over the past couple years are on this like high streak right now. Like, they are just crushing everything. And now the remake of Resident Evil 3 is coming out in a couple months. Like, oh my god. Thank you, Resident Evil 2, for being the best game of 2019.
I love your passion and excitement for the game. I'm looking forward to trying it out at some point. And yeah, it has been interesting to see Capcom take this route of rebuilding these games up from the beginning. Like you said, these are remakes. These aren't just HD remasters. It's what worked and how can we improve upon that. So here's just an interesting question, and I'm not trying to poke your buttons or anything, but given that Resident Evil 3 is getting a remake, do you think they're going to go through the rest of the series? Like, do you think 4 is going to get a from-the-ground-up remake?
So, yeah, it's going to. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to, because I want Code Veronica remake first.
Well, maybe they'll do that first. Like,
If they do that... If they give me a Code Veronica remake, I will accept a Resident Evil 4 remake.
I mean, it's just really...
Quick time events and all.
Well, maybe they'll remove them. You know, maybe that's going to be part of what the remake approaches is. How can we...
Well, yeah, I mean,
redo
Resident
these.
Evil 4, you have one of the best like cutscenes in GameCube, you know, era. A really cool knife fight between two people, but you can't watch any of it because you have to worry about what buttons you need to press. Right?
I have these very strong opinions about when cutscenes take away opportunities for you to engage with the game. And I would say that, like, that is an example of this weird middle ground where, like, I don't think the fight between Leon and Krauser, that's how you pronounce his name, right? Krauser?
Krautzer,
yeah.
Sauerkraut.
I don't think the fight between Leon and Sauerkraut is something that should be watched. I think it's something that should be done. Was the QuickTime event the best way to do that? I mean, maybe just that point in history, yeah, but, like, I would rather see that as a boss fight. So, yeah, it's interesting, and maybe the remake, whenever they get to it, will address that. But that's the beauty of remakes. You can go, and you can take something and cast it in a new light. I did the tagline of the show.
I get it. You did that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about, though, like, when that game was released, like, they pretty much, that's what they could work with. And I understand that, but they could have also worked with it in a better game. So what's your number one, Tom?
Oh, my number one, it's kind of in a vein similar to yours. But my number one, funnily enough, is a port. And it's a port of a game not from this year, which kind of summarizes a lot of my feelings about this year, is that I had a lot more fun interacting with things out of 2019 than I did with things in 2019. So that being said, my number one game of this year is Dragon Quest XI S Echoes of an Elusive Age Definitive Edition. You have to say the whole name every time or it doesn't count.
You do, yeah.
But yes,
people will think you're talking about the other game.
No. This Switch port of a PS4/3DS game, the 11th canonical mainline entry in the Dragon Quest series, is the most fun I've had with a RPG since Chrono Trigger, as I mentioned in our Best of the Decade episode. I love the world, simple as it is, you know, chosen one with a destiny, raised by not his parents, goes on a quest, meets friends, fights baddies. It's very boilerplate in certain ways, but it's all brought to life with these really interesting and charming characters who are just rendered beautifully through very nice animation. The score is so beautiful. Like, I have the way you said that, like, in the way that you said you have, like, thought back to instances of when Blair Witch scared the crap out of you, I've just, like, had melodies from this game float through my head, and they just soothe me or excite me in ways that are really just beautiful and pleasant. The baddies in this game, all of the bad guys are so charming or just funny and unique. Like, I will rush into enemy encounters just to see what their names are or what their attacks are. In the beginning of the game, you have these kind of pushover baddies that are there for you to kind of, like, you know, plow through and easily level up. And one type of these baddies are called Cruelcumbers. And they are literally cucumbers with a face and legs and arms, and they attack you with spears. And when you defeat them, they get knocked backwards, and their spears fly up in the air and come down and land on them. So their own spear delivers the finishing blow. And, like, that's just the beginning of the inventive and just, like, sometimes you fight monsters that are, like, in ways so adorable that you don't want to kill them, and sometimes you fight monsters that look so cool that you, like, I hope this wasn't a one-time encounter, you know? Like, it's this game filled with so many interesting world-building elements that being a part of it is super fun and super exciting. And, yeah, I have been enjoying the heck out of it, and I'm not technically done with it because, you know, like I said, I'm not done with barely anything I played this year, but the midpoint twist in this game was a hell of a shocker. I had a friend who kind of recommended this game to me, and when I told him, oh, I got to this moment, he's like, oh, awesome, now the game really starts. And I was like, wait, what? So that was an intriguing, like, thing to see play out. And yeah, I'm still having a blast with it. I'm still going back to it, and I would definitely recommend it for anyone who's into a nice long RPG to get invested in.
Well, I can understand why you're not done with it yet, because it is a Dragon Quest game, and those are, like, what, 175 hours per game?
Apparently.
Yeah, that's word on the street is. It's only about, what, 3-4 days worth of gameplay?
Three, 4 days worth of side quests, maybe, but...
Yeah, that's like a week's worth of gameplay. Mm-hmm. I actually have Dragon Quest XI as well. I have it for the PlayStation 4. I have not started it yet. Because I'm giving some more love to my Xbox One right now. So I want to give that some love, and then I don't know, I might hop back into it then, but I'm playing some things right now that I'm kind of enjoying.
I got you.
I've heard a lot of great things about Dragon Quest. I haven't played a Dragon Quest game since Dragon Quest 2.
Wow.
Because I have them for the... I'm sorry, back in the day they were called Dragon Warrior, Tom. I have them for the NES. But they actually just got re-released on the Switch, too. So 1, 2, 3, and 4, I think.
I did see that, yeah. As part of the holiday sales, I saw that they were pretty fairly priced.
Yeah, yeah, it's... But I've heard a lot of great things about this one. Everyone's saying that it's one of the better RPGs that's come out in recent memory. Better than some Square Enix games that released at the beginning of this year.
Gotcha. All right. Well, now that we're all filled with the power of pep from talking about our top threes, what games from out of this year did you try in 2019, Josh? And what can you tell us about them?
Well... I have them actually written down in order here. Mm-hmm. So the first game I beat this year is a game that I beat. I went through and I beat this game really hard.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You don't beat that many games, so I wonder what this could be.
No, it's a game that I beat, and at the end of it, I got an achievement for beating Cuphead. And I was like,
Whoa, wait. You beat Cuphead?
I did beat Cuphead. Yeah, it's crazy.
Shut up.
Yeah. Yeah, I went through. I beat Cuphead. but after that, I picked up a game that I started playing last year, and I finally finished it, which was God of War 2018.
Ah.
And my God, was that's a great game. Like, it's a great game. It didn't make my list of games of the decade, but like... It's a great game, and I highly recommend. If you have a PlayStation 4, definitely play it.
Okay.
Moving over to the Switch, I beat Octopath Traveler.
And how did you feel about Octopus Traveler?
Octodad Travel Agency was pretty decent. It got a little repetitive. It was pretty much the same story beats for all 8 characters to a certain extent. I did like some of the stories. I want to say like 3 or 4 of the characters had really good stories pieces to it. And I was like, okay, so I'll continue that. But I actually beat all 8 characters' stories. I didn't do like all the end game stuff because there's like gods and stuff like that you have to fight. Mm-hmm. But it was very enjoyable. It was a great take on like an older style of RPG. It's very similar to Bravely Default and whatnot.
Ah, okay.
After that, I beat... Bendy and the Incredible Ink Machine.
Did that come out in the Wii? Is it a remake or something?
No. It was a PC game that got released exclusively in physical form at GameStop, and then like a couple months later, it released everywhere, which made me mad because I was like, oh, I gotta go to GameStop and buy this, where I can't use my Gamers Club Unlocked from Best Buy. Aww. And then a couple months later, I saw that we had it at Best Buy. I'm like, you son of a bitches.
You lied to me.
Game wasn't that great. I don't know what everybody's hype was for it. I know there's a lot of like merchandise in stores about it. It was fine. It was like, what if Walt Disney kind of went crazy?
Okay.
Like,
okay.
And his characters came to life, but like it was a lot of like Disney ripoff stuff, which it was all right, but very forgettable. Trials of the Blood Dragon, which we talked about on this podcast.
Yes.
Pokemon Shield, which, talked about a little bit earlier. The Messenger's DLC, Picnic Panic, was fantastic. Very enjoyable, very hard. Still had a lot of the great humor from the original game. Shovel Knights, King of Cards, came out this year as well, too, which is another game that I played through. And it was pretty fun. Nice little card game inside of it. A little shocker of a game that I played that I don't think came out this year. I think it came out last year on PC, which I played this year on Xbox, was called Minute.
Okay.
And Minute is a very creative little game. You are this little creature that has a minute to live.
Oh.
So you go out in this world and you do stuff in it, and then your character dies. But the stuff that you did stays. Like, if you unlock the door, that door will stay unlocked then. So the next time you go through, you can get to the end. Like, you can go through that door and so on and so on. So it's very similar to, like, the old-style Legend of Zelda. So the top-down Legend of Zelda games. But your character has a minute to live. So every time you're doing stuff, like, you have to be mindful of, like, oh, well, I have to get here. But the only way I can get here is by this. Now, that's going to shed off 20 seconds of time. Like, so you have to figure out how to get from point A to point B. And you can use, like, little warp ports or, like, save your game at this part here. So you'll wake up in this bed or rent this house so you can live here for a second so you can come in so you're closer to where you need to be. And it was very fun. It probably took me like 2-3 hours to beat, but like, I was like, that's very creative.
Right.
But yeah. But that's really from the games of like the minor games of this year, but games of previous year that were pretty big. That's what I played through. How about you, Tom? What all did you go through that didn't happen in 2019?
Well, right off the bat, I mentioned this in the Best of the Decade episode. I played Hollow Knight for the first time this year. Absolute masterpiece. Go play Hollow Knight. It's beautiful. Can't recommend that enough. I played a lot of this game called Reign: Game of Thrones around the time that the show's final season was airing. So what Reigns is, it's a strategy type game that's almost like a choose your own adventure story where you play a monarch and you basically are advised by several different types of people and you make decisions for your kingdom based on advice you're given or advice you reject. And they released a Game of Thrones version of this where you progressively choose different characters from the show to be the king or queen of Westeros. Like, you start with Daenerys and then you unlock Jon Snow, Tyrion Lannister, Sansa Stark, etc. And, you know, each time you start as a new ruler, you have to choose your small, you have to choose your council, you have to choose your hand of the king. It's like, oh, the poor are rioting because there's a lack of food. What should we do? It's like, allocate more food or like let them suffer. They need to learn who's in charge, things like that. And as you are making these decisions, you're building up these little meters. It's like how much power you wield, how much the people love or hate you, how much the faith of the kingdom is put in you. It's kind of like a religious tier, and how much military power you have or don't have. And every decision you make affects one of those choices. And ultimately, each of these little storylines you're playing out ends when you make so many decisions that one of those meters either maxes out or bottoms out. Like, you can become so powerful in a good way that somebody kills you because they're like, well, their power's maxed out, that means they could become a tyrant. Or you could have such a low power meter that someone takes you out because it's like, well, they were a weak queen, so now I've taken over. And it's really interesting because even if you played like Daenerys twice in a row, I guarantee you that you could not like make the same sequence repeat twice unless you were deliberately trying, you know, like there is so many possible different endings to it. And I had a lot of fun with it, and it was, it's like under $10 digitally. So it's something that's really easy to pick up and play. I played Castlevania for the first time as part of this show, and it was wonderful. And it's a piece of history that I'm very glad I caught up on. And, now I can see what you were geeking out about for all these years. So, yes, very, very much enjoyed that. You know, I tried to play Fire Emblem Three Houses. I really did. Nothing against fans of that game or anything. It's just I was very, very into the academy aspect of the game. I really was into the side questing and the building social relationships. It's just that once it kind of forced me to get into Fire Emblem style of combat, it dragged to a point where I put it down and was like, maybe this is for another day or something. I don't know. So that's just a small note about a game from this year. I really gave it a shot, but I didn't gel with it. Yeah, I don't know. This was a year where I was playing singular games for long stretches of time. Like, when we got into this year, I was still playing Red Dead Redemption 2. And then I kind of followed it up with Hollow Knight, and I played that for a long time. And, yeah, if I wasn't taking breaks to play things for this show, I kind of was, like, just single-mindedly trying other things. So, a little bit of a weaker year for me in terms of keeping up with games, but hopefully I can change that in 2020.
Yeah. Got a lot of good things coming up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And got a lot more games coming out in 2022, so hop on that back catalog now.
So Josh, before we wrap up, do you have any, I just kind of stated a kind of gaming resolution for the next year that I want to try to play more contemporary releases. Do you have any gaming resolutions?
So by the end of 2020, I will have a complete Amiibo collection. Like, that's number one on my list right now.
Okay.
I'm one away.
Almost there.
Yeah. But other than that, now, just trying to catch up on a lot of my back catalog right now. I might try to jump into Dragon Quest. I just started up Ni No Kuni, so we'll see how this pairs out. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of great things about it, so we'll see. We'll go into that. But mm-hmm. no, I think it's just... there's a lot of games that I've just missed out on, and I just got to start playing them. I got to just shut off what's around me right now, like... I don't need to worry about new games coming out because, like, the next game I care about playing is probably going to be Resident Evil 3.
Right.
Maybe Final Fantasy 7, but, like, I don't really want to play that until, like, the whole thing gets released.
Yeah, that's true because, sorry, go ahead. It's like eating half a meal. And you're like, when's the next part coming
A third
out?
Of the meal.
Oh, yeah.
A third of the meal.
Yeah.
Because this is only technically Midgard that's coming out. So that's probably, like, the first disc on the PlayStation 1 side of things. And that was 3 discs long. So, I don't know. I just want to play more games.
Yeah. Actually,
I got a game room. I'm going to start. I want to use it, like, all the time now.
Right. You know, yeah. You put all this damn work into it, you better use it.
Right. But
I'm actually going to change up my resolution just a wee bit. Like, playing more contemporary games will be an ongoing pursuit. But I will say that I think something I want to try to do by the end of 2020 is I want to platinum a game. Now, not in the sense that I have a PS4, because as we stated, I miss that generation again, but I miss Sony again for a generation is what I meant to say. But I don't remember the last time. I think I've only ever 100%ed some Xbox Live Arcade games, which are like only 200 gamer points in terms of achievements. So I need to pick a game and decide that I'm going to 100% it and be a completionist about it. So yeah, I think that's going to be a goal for me this decade. I mean, this year. I keep you saying decade because I'm in that mindset, you know, like, oh.
Well, you got 2 days left from recording this.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, I was very tempted on trying to platinum a Jedi Fallen Order. And there's just some things in there that I'm just like, I just can't. I just don't want to do this. Like, I almost have every world 100%ed in the game right now. But I'm just like, I just don't really want to go back to this one particular planet because I don't think you've gotten there yet. But I was like, I don't want to go to this one particular planet because it was just forever and terrible and just so long and drawn out and I wasn't having fun with it. And now I have to go back and kind of peek through every little teeny bush, every little teeny like building. You know what I mean? Like, ugh.
It's time to poke around in those bushes, Josh.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, 2020 is right around the corner. We got a lot of good things coming up and a lot of good games to talk about. So until next time, this has been Josh
and Tom.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past. So thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.